Welcome to the Gold Standard Game 3 and 4 edition here on the show from the 440 Sports Network. My name is very tired and possibly hungover Braden Gall. That is Emma Lingen from the Hockey News, and that is Michael Gallagher, of course, from Nashville Hockey Now. How are we doing this wonderful and fine Saturday morning, folks?
Also very tired. I feel hungover, even though I didn't drink anything last night, just from covering that game and going to bed really late.
Same here.
I just about spit out my coffee, which would have been great for video purposes and our audience, but really bad for all of my equipment here in the studio. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us. Of course, if you are watching on Twitter, on Facebook, on YouTube, please give us a thumbs up. Please share the show. Tell folks that it's going on. We'll get you guys in. We'll let you guys kind of trickle in here. And once you're in, if you got some comments or some questions about what you guys want to see in game number 4, or what you thought about what happened in game number 3, we are here. Simon says, I'm up for an hour of 77 chat. Just 1 hour of Luke Evangelista, I bet, is what I'm hearing here. Nothing else is worth talking about, right? We didn't lose. Before we get into what actually happened, because there was it felt like a totally different game, and I'll be very honest with you guys. I was hosting a charity event for kids here in Middle Tennessee. I did not have a chance to have a TV on to watch the game while we were doing it. I got home around midnight, and I tried to watch like the third period, and my body gave out. I'm a middle-aged dad. I couldn't hold on for very long. So I'm exhausted, and it's my own doing. It's my own fault. It's not like I was working like you two fine folks at Bridgestone Arena. So we'll get into adjustments for game 4. We'll get into Tyson Barrie. We'll get into Spencer Stastny. We'll get into obviously public enemy number one, who continues to prove that he is public enemy number one, Dakota Joshua. The power play, the problems on the power play, and sort of a different balance on the ice, it would appear, from an offensive zone time, shots, sort of the ice being tilted. Bad penalties, of course, for the team in the first period, it would appear. But I'm going to ask you guys first, Emma, this was your first time at Bridgestone Arena for a Predators playoff game. I'm curious sort of your initial takeaways, your initial thoughts. Michael and I have been covering it for a long time, so I always appreciate sort of a fresh set of eyes getting to experience Predators hockey when it's in its finest form, which is playoff Bridgestone. How'd you feel about it? What'd you think?
So I'm going to start this before everyone just eviscerates me. Let me finish. But I will say my initial impression was that I feel like playoff hockey at Bridgestone, like, it's been hyped up a lot. I was expecting a lot in terms of just volume and energy and things like that. I wouldn't say I really felt that last night at Bridgestone. However, before all the fans just come and storm my home, I think that the Predators didn't really give them a lot to be excited about. I do think that, you know, once Evangelista scored that goal in the third period, I mean, it was a little too late, the crowd really did kind of perk back up, and, you know, the noise was there, the energy was there. So it wasn't really what I would have expected from a playoff crowd necessarily, but I don't put that on the fans. I don't think that it was their fault. I think it was just the Preds weren't giving them much to work with.
There's going to be an insurrection. They're going to storm her house in Germantown. We're going to have an insurrection there.
Good luck, because all the roads are closed for the damn marathon now. So good luck getting here.
That's true. That's why everyone should be hanging out with us right now. If you're not running in the marathon, you should be hanging out with us here. And again, if you want to jump into the comments, please do. If you have questions about game 4, game 3, please jump in.
I will say that she is right. Like, as someone who has covered many playoff games at Bridgestone Arena, I've seen that at its peak loudest. And last night, the last 10 minutes of last night's game, that is what it's usually is for like an entire game. So I do think she's right that the fans didn't really have much to cheer about, because the Predators were kind of getting their asses kicked the entire game. And it's hard to be invested as a fan for three full periods when it feels like you're kind of playing from behind the entire time. But as someone who's seen Bridgestone Arena at its peak, like, we know how loud it can be. And last night was a little bit disappointing. It's not really the fans' fault. They didn't really have much to cheer about, but we've all seen that place be louder.
That's what I was going to ask. Like, you've got something to compare it to. And certainly I've been to my share of games as well. I did not have a chance to see the first or second periods. I mean, look, from what I understand, and I'm going to ask you guys this, we kind of start each show sometimes. It's sort of like the one big thing. But I already have I've got a couple of text messages from friends that listen to the show, and of course that are huge Preds fans. And I'll one take on Michael McCarron, and one take on Emma's Luke Shen fan hate club, which I thought was started with Michael Gallagher, actually. But that's just
how cool. Did I become the face of this? I really don't understand.
Well, it's funny. He gets back to me and he's like, also, I'm really curious about your guys' take on the atmosphere. And I've long had a joke about the Predators 2017 playoff run that I don't think if the Preds win a cup, I don't think anything will ever be like 2017. Even the parade for the cup would not be the same as sort of the first time Nashville learned what deep playoff hockey felt like. And that was just a unique moment in time at Bridgestone. And what happened is, and I've always used this joke, after that playoff run, the lower bowl, a lot more quarter zips, a lot less hoodies. It went from a very blue collar around the county support of season ticket holders that could afford it to sort of a lot of like Green Hills suburban quarter zip fans. And I don't know if that's a part of this.
Oh, it absolutely is. The demographic of the people that are in Bridgestone Arena, it changed because once they made that cup run, they were a winning franchise all of a sudden. Now you had people that had money buying out the lower bowl. You had some season ticket holders not renewing because the prices skyrocketed. Like the demographic of the fan base inside the arena changed drastically after that cup run.
Yeah, and his line was, I don't know what it is. I'd like to hear from you, but it did not feel like past playoff games to me. And that's it for both of you. Emma, you said, look, it didn't necessarily live up to the expectations. Michael, you've kind of caveated that as well. I do agree. It's not if they had put one in the first period, which it felt like they were the better team, which is not the case in the first two games where they were not the better team and somehow had a first period lead. This is what makes hockey so fun. You are the better team in the first period, but a dumb, stupid penalty and power play and you give up a goal and all of a sudden you're down 1-0 to the best first period team in the NHL. So you kind of have to give the fans something to cheer about. But I was very curious to see. It's not David Poile. It's a third coach since the cup run. Like it's just been a while. And I'm just curious what it was like. So
it felt like a 2011, 2012 playoff run before they started winning playoff series when it was still kind of new. Last night was definitely not playoff loud as Bridgestone Arena has been. So, there was probably a lot of new fans there, but yeah, like Emma was right. Like it was a little bit disappointing. Like, cause it playoff loud at Bridgestone Arena has been hyped up to be this big thing. And it didn't really show last night. And I can only imagine like how much it didn't sound like that on the TV broadcast. Well,
and a Friday night too, shouldn't be like this. It's just not a Tuesday night. This is a Friday night. It should be pretty up energy levels high on a Friday night. All right. So what's the one big thing here, guys? I want to hear from you. And what's the thing? What's the reason Vancouver wins game three? What's the reason that Nashville is down 2-1? What's your one big takeaway from game three?
An 0-for-5 power play.
All right.
That's one. I would add just not the Predators not putting the puck on the net until the third period and not really testing DeSmith enough. And they tried to get too cute with a lot of things and they were almost too methodical when, you know, a series like this, the way it's gone, if you're going to score, it's going to have to be greasy and ugly. And the Preds just were not crashing the net enough. I didn't think it wasn't, you know, there were so many opportunities because DeSmith looked good. DeSmith looked good blocking shots. He did not look good handling the puck. So I think there were so many opportunities that the Preds did not exploit to chip in a rebound or tip in a deflection or something like that. And those are like the kind of ugly, greasy goals that you need to actually get a lead in a series like this. And so I think that was an issue.
Yeah, I think that's probably one of the biggest things, and Andrew Burnett's probably driving this into their heads. They're not pressuring Casey DeSmith enough. When you have a backup goaltender in a playoff series, you need to be making his life miserable. There were so many rebounds and second chance shots that were not put in just because they were out of position. There was nobody there to collect those rebounds. I mean, I feel like they should be swarming it. And look, they put up 30 shots to 30 to 12. When the shot disparity is that big, you need to get more than one goal. And they're just not making life hard enough on Casey DeSmith.
I agree. And I think just like in game two for the Preds, I think Vancouver did a brilliant job of getting into the shooting lanes. Like they blocked, I think, 29 shots, something like that. Predators had like 33 in game two. Yeah,
I mean, if you look at natural stat trick, the scoring chances for were 33-18 in favor of the Predators, and the high danger chances for were 13-4 in favor of the Predators. And it's crazy that they got one goal out of all the chances they had last night.
So one of the things that I would ask, because I completely agree, you've got to put a backup goaltender into stressful situations where he has to sort of make consecutive saves back to back to back, where he is flailing, and like even the great goaltenders are put into those situations at times, and then they can. We've seen UC Saros do it a number of times where he gives up rebounds where he wants to most of his career, and he's great on rebound saves. He doesn't give up too much. You got to put a guy into a tough situation, make his life stressful, and they haven't done that. And I think what's interesting, and we'll get to the power play because that's a huge one, but I'm curious if you think that's because of the size and I don't know, length or just defensive structure for Vancouver, but I think their defense, one of the things that has sort of been consistent through all three games has been sort of, and I thought maybe game three that the Preds were the best on the forecheck with offensive zone time and sort of that stuff. It seems like the defense is doing that to keep pressure off of DeSmith, not the Preds not executing well, but I think the defense for Vancouver has done an excellent job of really throwing them off in that high danger area in front of the net.
I think it's a combination for sure. I mean, if you look at Vancouver's defense, and Andrew Brunette said it too, like Vancouver's defense as a whole is bigger than Nashville's. When Nashville is on their game, they are faster. And that could be the advantage, but it looks like to me, Nashville is playing into Vancouver's hand with the way that they're playing. Like Vancouver's game, their bread and butter is these low event games where it's heavily defensive and, you know, it's low scoring, low shots usually. And Nashville is letting them dictate that. Like, yes, okay, Nashville might dictate the pace and they might be a little faster, but they're faster getting into the zone, but then they don't do anything once they get there. So it's a little bit like they are letting Vancouver dictate it and they look overpowered. You know, when Vancouver's got guys on their defense, like Carson Soucy, Tyler Myers, Ian Cole, Nikita Zadorov, those guys, like they're big and they have range and the Predators just look overpowered. And I think that they're allowing, you know, they're trying to, it's almost like those guys that I just mentioned, they're bigger and they're stronger than you, unless you're like Jeremy Luzon, like they're bigger and stronger than you. And so the Predators are almost trying to outmuscle them, it seems like, and failing because they're not going to be able to do that. What they need to do is play into their strengths, which is their speed and their puck handling, and, you know, not try to best Vancouver at Vancouver's game, because that's not going to work.
Yeah, Jeremy Luzon and Luke Shen are the only two Predators defensemen that are taller than 6 foot. And you're looking at all the guys that Vancouver has. I mean, Ian Cole's 6'2", Soucy's 6'5", Myers is 6'8", Zadorov is 6'6". Like, I basically picture it like you're trying to go up against like a defense core of Ryan Reeves, basically. Like, they're big, they're strong. You can't move them off the puck because you just bounce off of them. And Andrew Brunette even said that last night. He was like, look, their defense is giving us fits because they're bigger than we are. And that's an issue. And the Predators during the regular season, they didn't really play a lot of teams like Vancouver that were bigger and stronger. Like, they could play their game and they could almost kind of trick the other team, like bait them into playing their style of game. Vancouver does that to Nashville. So when you're going up against a team like that, you have to find a way to dictate the terms of the game the way that you want. And we haven't seen them be able to do that. I think, and Michael McCarron even pointed this too in post game. He said towards the end of the third period they were able to score that goal and they were able to kind of stage a little bit of a comeback. He was like, because we wore them down, we grinded on them. He was like, you could tell they didn't want to go back and get pucks. They were hurting a little bit because we were banging them around, and Nashville had more hits last night than Vancouver did. They need to take the way they played in the last 10 minutes of last night and play that over a full period. I don't know if they can do that because everyone's sore and that's just an exhausting way to play, but that's how Nashville won a lot of their games in the regular season, was by wearing other teams down and being able to deal. I know Andrew Brunette said be committed to the pain or whatever, but they were able to win the war of attrition, and that's what they need to start doing to Vancouver, and they haven't been able to do it.
Excellent compliment by Vancouver coach Rick Tocchet after the game about Andrew Brunette's offensive sets and scheme and style and approach. But there's a reason that the beef line and the top line have been successful in the zone, And what do those two have in common that the other two lines don't? Size and power. Like, those two lines have size and power, and so they're a little bit more comfortable in those situations. Otherwise, Tommy Novak, again, like Tommy Novak has had a real big problem in this series. I think, I don't know if it's just a first playoff series, and, you know, but he's not like 21 years old. Like, he's not a young player, but he's not a huge guy. Evangelista has been better, and he's one of the few smallish guys that's like been able to kind of manage it all. But like, Zucker's not a big guy. Beauvillier's not a big guy. Like, Colton Sissons has got some size and strength to him, but these guys aren't huge, and those two lines have struggled the most. And so I think ultimately, and now we can get onto the power play, because I agree with what you guys are saying. And what I said in the going into the series, and this was, remember, I don't remember exactly where they were, but I want to say like the third best power play since February 1st or since the All-Star break. They were like one of the top five power plays in the NHL, right? Surging down the stretch, one of the best power play units in the NHL. And what I find interesting is, I think I said, your power play being unproductive is not like, you don't, that's not how you lose a series. You're not going to lose a series because you don't score power play goals, but it's the reason you don't win. And I think those are two very, it's like a subtle difference, but I think there's a difference. I believe they scored on their first power play, right? Wasn't the first power play of the series the goal that they scored? They're 1-for-13 now. And last night, 0-for-5. So you can clearly say maybe there's a chance this is going into overtime. Again, it's not a reason you lost the game, but it's a reason you didn't win it. And I think in game one, honestly, I think in game one, they had, I think, I want to say they scored on the first one in the second period, and they had like three straight power plays where they did not score. And I was sitting there watching going like, all right, they can overcome this. They can win if they can play great defense, and they're going to have to withstand a third period rush by the Canucks. But it's a reason, like, if you would have gotten an extra one, you win the game. And so I think you could point to game one and game three and say the reason you're down in the series, it's not the reason you're going to lose the series, but it could be the reason you don't win it. And I think, again, those are subtle differences, but I do think there's a little bit of a difference between those two things. And right now, you know, 1-for-13 is, you can't, you know, what did they do against the Dallas Stars a couple years ago? 0-for-15 in a 6-game series. Like, it's not that bad, but it's getting close.
Well, especially when it's a game like game three where guys on both teams can't stay out of the box. It seems like you need your special teams to be on. And for the Preds, they just aren't. I mean, the penalty kill was doing very well. I mean, they were 100% on the penalty kill entering game three. And then, boom, back-to-back power play goals for Vancouver.
Was some of that a little bit of luck, though? Like,
oh, yeah. But, I mean, okay, you have to be lucky at this time of year. Sure. Like, you have to be a little bit of lucky. But I think, you know, if you're looking at specialty, and like you said, it can be the reason that you don't win a series. I keep going back to that regular season game against Boston that was 0-0 until like midway through the third period, and Nashville was doing everything right at 5-on-5. Boston couldn't stay out of the box, but Nashville could not capitalize on it. And that, you know, and then Boston scores the shorthanded goal, and you know, the wheels just fell off. And so I think that's an example of a power play or special teams in general being the reason that you don't win. And I think that was, you know, just looking at last night's game, a 5-on-5, Nashville did everything but win the game, it seemed like. I mean, they were finally, you know, we were all up in arms after game two about how they couldn't get out of their own zone and they couldn't generate any chances and they were just playing on defense the whole time. They fixed all of that. You know, they got a lot more zone time, probably, you know, the best they've looked in the offensive zone this whole series. But then when they finally have an opportunity to capitalize on the power play, they just disappear. And it's hard because it just looks like with the power play specifically for the Predators, it looked like if they could not win that face off to start the power play, then it would, like, they just couldn't get set up. It wasn't going to happen. They couldn't get set up. Vancouver was all over them. Like you said, they're bigger, they have more range, and they outmuscled them. And the Predators, like I said, were trying to just play into Vancouver's game, which is not how you win a game or win a series, because you need to play to your own strengths.
Yeah. Two things I think I noticed. The first, Roman Josi, I believe, said this in post-game. He said that the problem with Vancouver's penalty kill is like, they're big and they don't move. He was like, so we can cycle through and we can do all this stuff. He was like, but they don't move. He was like, they're basically just like statues. And he was like, and it's hard to get shots through. It's hard to set up and implement what you want to do when you have, you know, this 6'5", 3 or 4 6'5" defensemen out there that just don't get out of the way. And I think that's something that they're really struggling with, is they don't know how to adjust their game when they're on the power play to a penalty kill that plays like that, because they haven't really seen that all season long, because most of the PKs they play against, they're using movement and speed and they're all over the place and they're playing the puck. Vancouver just kind of sticks where they're at, and they just don't really do anything. Like, they make you defend to them, which is kind of an interesting way to do a PK. And the second thing that I noticed was, especially towards late in the game, and I get it, Philip Forsberg is your best player. You want the puck in his on his stick at all times. But it seemed like there was too much trying to feed Forsberg on the power play, that they were trying to like will him open. And there's only so much the guy can do. And when everyone knows that Philip Forsberg is getting the puck on the power play, of course it's going to be harder for him to do stuff. And it just felt like there was too much reliance on Forsberg when they got him on the power play than anything else. And which is ironic, because Luke Evangelista had more power play time than all the other Preds forwards. But I think, yes, if you're going to come back in a game, you probably need Forsberg to do something, chip in offensively. But it seemed like the strategy late in the game was give Forsberg the puck, and everyone else. Yeah. Like, you could see when they're trying to cycle players and all the movement in the space they're trying to create, they weren't really doing what they normally do, because it was just like, oh, let's get Forsberg somewhere close to the crease and let him try and tee off. And it just wasn't working. So I feel like they got too, again, we talked about this earlier in the season, it was like they were too regimented. It was like, okay, everyone just cycle through, move around the net, just keep feeding Forsberg, and eventually he'll put one through.
And it's not just a game three problem. That's what they were doing after they scored the first power play goal in the first game. I felt like, and again, maybe it's because I've been watching the draft the last couple of nights for our charity, that all I see is Eminem. All I hear is Eminem's voice just singing around the outside the whole time. And that's what I feel like their power play is. It's just around the outside. And it just hasn't, like, to your point, you can't force it into one particular player. So I don't know if you expect to see any changes on the power play. This will lead us right into where Emma wants to take the possible conversation, which is number one, Dakota Joshua. Man, you just keep proving us right here as public enemy number one in a series. And I'll be honest, it's actually part of the fun of the NHL playoffs is how closely tied two teams get in a series. And how personal you start to understand players on the other team. And you will always end up picking a player or two that you just absolutely despise for both teams. Like, it's how hockey works. It's so great. And Dakota Joshua is just, I assume by the end of this thing, people are going to be furious. The penalty on Stasny gets elevated to a major. And of course, Stasny, now we don't know what his status is going to be. With power play problems, Emma, and a potential injured player, could there be a solution in the lineup, in your opinion, to address both the injury concern and the power play concern? What do you think?
Gee, let me think about that. I think, so with the hit on Stasny, first of all, just to go back to that, it was funny because, again, first thing I saw when I saw it happen, I'm like, who is that down there? And then he turns around, I'm like, son of a bitch, it's Dakota Joshua. I'm like, Braden was right. It was initially called a major. It was downgraded to a minor, which I found interesting. I will leave it at that. I don't think that Joshua was aiming for his head, but I mean, really, intent shouldn't really matter. But I don't think he was trying to get him in the head, but he's just a bigger guy than Stasny is. So he just got him up high. He went awkwardly into the boards. He looked shaken up. And I almost wonder if that decision to downgrade it to a minor is what kind of caused Stasny to come back into the game, at least for a little bit. And then obviously he missed part of the second and then all of the third period. And so you hate to see that. That being said, I certainly hope Stasny is okay. Don't want him to be out long-term or injured. However, I believe that there is a certain defenseman who has been sitting on the bench for Nashville for much of the season, who also happens to be one of the best power play defensemen in the National Hockey League. And I think if, you know, Andrew Burnett does not like to change, he doesn't like to do a lot of personnel changes if things are going well, like if he likes the way his team is playing, which he did 5-on-5, and he seemed to like that, you know, he's not going to make personnel changes. But if you were to have an injury, which would force you to make personnel changes, I would think that Tyson Berry might be a good guy to put in there for Stastny. He's also, you know, if Andrew Burnett was saying that, yes, Vancouver on defense, they're bigger and they have more range. So they're bigger. They can afford to just stand there and just not move.
Yep.
Nashville, when they're at their best, is faster. So if you want to replace, you can't really replace Stastny's speed and his skating because it really is at an elite level, especially for a guy as young as he is. But if you want a quick puck-moving defenseman who can also provide a spark on offense, particularly on the power play, who, you know, like, no, Tyson Berry doesn't have the size to match up with Vancouver, but no one on Nashville has the size to match up with Vancouver. And that's my thing, is like, you need to stop trying to out-muscle them and outsize them. You need to get your faster guys, your better puck moving, puck handling guys in there and play to your own strengths. Tyson Berry is tailor made for this situation. I think they need help on the power play. They need speed. They need quick movement, and they need a guy who can provide that spark on offense from the blue line. We know it's not going to be Luke Shen. It's not going to be Ryan McDonough. It's not going to be Jeremy Luzon. Like, it's not. Those are the big guys who can, like, try and match up with. But stop it, Braden.
Luke Shen, power play puck moving superstar.
You know what? There are some things that I even gave Luke Shen a compliment last night, and people on Twitter were like,
"He's taking too much."
I was not okay. Yeah, no, I'm like, when Stastny took that hit from Joshua, Shen goes over and he was trying to fight two guys at once, and he was actually winning both fights. Like, it was, I was like, that, you know what? That's
hard to do.
That was like the Cody McLeodis moment I've ever seen.
I mean, he looked like he was just absolutely handling both of those guys. I'm like, good for him, but that's what Luke Shen is good for. He is not going to create offense. He's not going to help you on the power play, obviously. Like, that's
all right. We've hit 60 seconds. Okay. We've hit our contractual obligation to be rude and disrespectful to a professional athlete.
Okay. Well, moving on. This is not a Luke Shen hate fest. This is a Tyson Berry love fest. And there I think go. That he needs to get in the lineup. I think he needed to get in the lineup regardless, but especially now, if Stastny isn't able to go for game 4, Tyson Berry's got to be your first man up.
All right. So go ahead.
Also, Michael. I want to throw in there too, Tyson Berry, 42% of his career points have come on the power play. And when you look, which is just crazy to think about, because I mean, we all know how good Roman Josi is, but Tyson Berry is legit. It's not hyperbole. He is one of the best power play defensemen in the NHL, period. And he scores 0.62 points per game. Other than Roman Josi, I think that's the highest among any other Predators defenseman in a series when you have scored 2 goals or fewer in 2 of the 3 games you played, and you need desperately need offense. You need to put guys out there that can put the puck in the net. And look, Alex Carrier, people think of him as an offensive defenseman because he had 30 points like 1 year. Like, he's not an offensive defenseman. And look, I love Dante Fabbro. He's not an offensive defenseman. Out of everybody you can put in the lineup right now, Tyson Berry gives you the best chance to, one, fill a spot on defense if Stastny does miss some time, and also to make your power play better. When you're 1 for 13, like, you need to start trying anything and everything you can. And I think that's the answer. And if Stastny is out, your options to fill his spot are either Dante Fabbro or Tyson Berry. Dante Fabbro maybe has a little bit of an edge if it's a more physical series, but Tyson Berry has the edge with power play prowess, with his speed, just the experience. He's been doing this a lot longer. So, I mean, if Stastny does miss any time, like, I don't see how you can go with anyone but Tyson Berry.
Well, what's funny about Carrier, real fast, because I think some of this is what Tommy Novak is dealing with too, is there's just sort of a mental thing now that you're in your own head about it. Like, the way Pettersson was clearly in his own head. I think he broke out. I think he's blocking shots. And what you have to do if you're in one of those funks is you have to do all the greasy, like, small shit to break yourself out of it. Get back to forechecking, get back to blocking shots. Pettersson had an assist, I believe, right on the first goal. So I think he's kind of snapped out of it a little bit. But Carrier, it's not because he had Carrier was he could enter the zone with the puck with creativity that season. And it's gone now. Like, he just doesn't do it anymore. I really like the way Carrier played offensively.
I've watched him miss at least three or four wide open nets when he's not like directly by the crease, but when he's really close to the net, he's had some open nets that he's just set the puck wide, and I don't understand it.
Well, I think Spencer Stastny could be what we thought Alex Carrier was going to be, is maybe where I'm landing on that. Because they both very good skaters. They can get into the zone if they want to. But that's what Carrier did early in his career. And he just, it's like he's either been trained to not be that or lost confidence in himself. He's clearly not played a great series. But Tommy Novak seems like he's dealing with that as well. And this is part of the game sometimes. You just lose confidence, or you're having a tough time, or you have a bad matchup, and you got to figure out a way to grease your way out of it. Power play needs to do that as well. When you see the hit, I thought it was interesting because we had a conversation about the Artemi Panarin and TJ Oshie hit, which didn't end up in a penalty at all. This one gets called a major, then it becomes a minor. I don't believe, because Stastny at the last second like skates backwards away from Joshua, and that's sort of where the head comes into the hitting range. So I don't think he was trying to go at the head. If you hate Dakota Joshua and you want to make the narrative stick that he's the public enemy, you can say that he was going for the head if you want to. I'm
watching the replay right now, and it's just because Dakota Joshua is so much bigger than Stastny. When he actually makes contact with him, his elbow is on Stastny's shoulder. It's just the size difference that made it look really bad.
Well, and to Stastny's credit, like, he's, I mean, when you go into the boards knowing someone's behind you, you are always trying to not deke them, but you are going to go one way and then go the other. Like, that's exactly what you're supposed to do to try to get out of the way of the hit. And you can tell at the last minute he goes to his right after looking like he's going to his left, and that's what drops the head into the strike zone. So I don't think it was a dirty hit in that sense, so I'm okay. But the fact that that was a penalty and the Panarin one was not, like, I don't think it was nearly as bad a hit as the Panarin hit. And the Panarin hit got no penalty, and this one was originally, and that's because it's Dakota Joshua and not Artemi Panarin. I think it proves the hit kind of proved the point of the conversation we had after game number two. All right, this is what makes hockey weird and makes hockey fun, is that you can get completely outplayed for almost every minute of a game and win on the road. Then you can come back and play your best game of the series and not score really a goal for almost all of the game at home, even though you played your best game of the series. You could have won game one. The only period that I feel like was an accurate representation of the two teams was like period three in game one. It's like the only period that I think like Vancouver played their game, Nashville played their game, and Vancouver was better. And it's like, it's such a weird sport. And it's what I love about the playoffs, is that so much stuff you can do right and then lose, and so much stuff you can do wrong and then win. So what happens in game four? What do we got on Sunday afternoon?
The Canucks outplay the Predators and lose.
Yeah. That's what has to happen now, right?
That's how the series is going.
Yeah. Like, the Canucks are going to absolutely take it to the Predators, and the Predators are going to win. And it's going to be another low scoring. It's going to be like 2-1 or 3-2 or something like that.
Nashville had 30 block shots in game two. Vancouver had 28 in game three. So I'm going to guess, go on a limb here and say one of them is going to have 20 plus block shots in game four. The series does not make sense. Like, what should be happening based on the eye test and the analytics is the opposite. So, I mean, good luck trying to figure out what's going to happen here.
Yeah, I want to say it wasn't the total shot differential, if you include like not shot, just like shot attempts, right? In game two, I want to say it was like 75 to like 25 or 75 to 30 or something like that. Yeah. Last night, of course, it was because they had 28 or 20, it was like, didn't the Preds have something like 60 shot attempts to the Canucks, like 18 or something like that?
Yeah, I mean, through the first two periods, there were fewer than, I'm trying to remember, it was like, I mean, even if you go early in the game, the Canucks scored in game three, the Canucks scored their first two, their power play goals, two goals on their first five shots of the game. Yep. Four of those shots came on the power play. I'm like, this seems like a very easy solution here. Like, I think we've narrowed down the problem. And so I think that when you look at those shot differentials too, it's, I mean, again, this is where I go back to, Nashville was trying to play Vancouver's game. And early on, I mean, there were just like, both teams were in single digits, I think, in shots after the first period.
I want to say it was like 7-4 or something, or 7 yeah. to 6 or something like that. Going it was into the third period, yeah.
Which is not Nashville's game. Like, it's not, it's Vancouver's game, but it's not Nashville's game. And so I think that that's an issue. You know, I think they just need to start throwing it on the net. I mean, like, not to be that annoying drunk guy in the crowd who's like, shoot it. But that honestly, I feel like is what you need to do.
Annoying drunk guy is right every now and then. Not often.
Yeah.
But every now and then. We talked about this at the beginning of the series before it started. After a couple of games in a series, sometimes you see a team that needs to make an adjustment stylistically. Are we at that point where you want to see the adjustment stylistically? And I think my suggestion was you could take some defensemen off the ice, put some on, and accelerate your offense even further. Go, I would call it like warp speed, right? Like they play fast, but if they want to win, do they have to go even faster and even more, like, I'm not saying finesse, that's not the right word, but an even faster style? Because clearly when you try to play this physical brand that Vancouver wants to play, I don't know if they can win more games. So maybe they do need to try something different. Is there anything else you want to see different outside of Tyson Barrie getting into the lineup and maybe being a little bit, you know, obviously some of that could be injury related, but anything else in the lineup you want to see? Is Novak, Juuso Parsonen has been called up onto the roster. That's a big guy. Does that mean you're trying to go big and maybe move one of these guys to center? Maybe Tommy Novak gets less time. Like, I don't, what do you guys think about the rest of the starting lineup?
That is interesting. Cause I saw someone tweet this last night. I mean, Novak, look, he's getting pushed around. He's getting just knocked to the ice. He's too small to go up against a team like Vancouver, especially if it's just a one-off game. Sure, fine, leave him in there. But when you're trying to win a seven-game series and you have a guy like Tommy Novak, who you count on to be a kind of a catalyst of your middle six there to drive offense, and he's getting pushed around and knocked to the ice, and he's on the ice sometimes more than he is going to the net, like you have to seriously consider that. And look, Parsonen is 6'3", 215. Novak is 6'1", 179 pounds. Like, there's a big weight difference there. If you're going up against a team like Vancouver that's physical, maybe it's not the worst idea to put someone like Parsonen and use his size. He can play all three forward positions. So if you switch him out and you put him centering that line, I mean, he's played with Novak a little bit, or played with Evangelista a little bit. He's played with Jankowski a little bit. Like, he's at least familiar with those guys. So I don't think it's the worst idea. I mean, you called him up. He's not going to be playing in Milwaukee for another, you know, 4 or 5 days. So why not take advantage of that?
That's what I said. I'm like, at first it was interesting because they, you know, they call Parsonen up and they say, well, it's like just to get him some reps because, you know, obviously Milwaukee's off for a little bit. We want to keep him fresh and, you know, just in case we need him. And it's like, okay, well, by that logic, then why didn't you also call up Phil Tomasino or, you know, anyone else? Like, I think that Parsonen's size is huge here. And he's a guy who's hard to knock off the puck. And like, yes, if you have Jankowski on that line, you know, he has the size, but he can't keep guys off of both Evangelista and Novak. Like, it's too much for one guy. And so I think that, yes, like Novak at his best is more of a scoring threat than Parsonen is, but in this kind of series, you need a guy who's hard to knock off the puck, and I think that that's Parsonen. And I would like to see Evangelista, especially with how he's played, and he finally got rewarded with a goal last night. I would like to see Evangelista on a line with some bigger guys who can keep guys away from him, allow him to do his thing and make the plays that he's been trying to make this whole series.
You need people to stand in front of the net and hold their ground. You need people to dig pucks out of the boards. You need those kind of guys. Novak's had a shot. Like, it's not like they haven't given him a chance, and it just hasn't worked this series. And it doesn't mean it's not going to be great in the future. It doesn't mean the contract is bad. It doesn't mean we need to overreact here, but in the moment, sometimes you're just having a bad series and somebody else might do better. Now, what's interesting is we've had sort of two different conversations, right? Like, do we change the series stylistically and go faster because the other team can't and maybe doesn't want to play that way? Or do you try to match up better with them and go bigger and stronger because the lines that have been successful are the two big physical lines, lines one and lines beef. Those are the two lines that have been most productive because they're big and physical.
I still think if you swap Novak for Parsonen out, you're gaining an advantage in size and speed because Novak isn't really a speedy forward. Parsonen can be, but I feel like he's tried to tailor his game to kind of like what they expected out of Mika Salamaki. Like, he was fast, but you didn't really see that speed because Salamaki was out there like hitting people and laying shots to the body. And I'm not saying like they're
he's a much smaller. He's a much smaller player than Parsonen, though.
He is, but they relied on Mika Salamaki to use his physicality more so than his speed. And I'm just saying, like, speed was underrated part of his game. If you swap Parsonen in for Novak, I think you're getting an advantage in speed and size. And I think part of what is wrong with Novak right now is he's trying to do too much because he knows that he's been bad out there. And I think he's trying to overcompensate a little bit. You have someone like Parsonen who got sent down, just kind of accepted it is what it is. Someone who's like worked his tail off and he's back here. I think you could capitalize on the hungriness of Parson right now being in the situation he is.
I'm gonna ruin everyone's day and be like, it's almost as if you need a really big, physical, experienced puck handling center who doesn't get knocked off the puck in the playoffs. Who am I talking
crazy
about?
Idea.
Who am I idea. Talking about?
I'm not gonna take the bait.
Bring back Ryan Johansson.
who apparently may never even play hockey again, yeah. But hey, we'll just bring him out of retirement.
All right, we'll let you go with this. Preston asked a question, not to get back to the Barry conversation, but if he does make it into the lineup, would you like to see him on power play one with Yossi? I guess that would be taking Evangelista's spot, or like he did in the regular season, or do you want him to be the quarterback on power play two? I do think they need some movement on the second power play unit. That unit has struggled big time.
Yeah,
use him as both. Keep him out there the entire time.
Yeah. Do it like you do with Yossi. Just like leave him out there for like 2 minutes.
He should be well rested. There's no question about that.
Right?
The legs should be good.
You're like, damn, son, you were complaining you wanted more playing time. Here you go.
Yeah. All right. So you can catch Emma and Michael, their writing, their scribings, their work, all their analysis. Of course, you can catch Emma over at the Hockey News. You can catch Michael over at Nashville Hockey Now. So please go check out both of those websites. Subscribe, follow us all on the twitter.com at @MGSports_ at @Emma_Lingen. And of course, you can get to me at Braden Gall. Do appreciate you guys all listening. Monday morning, 9 a.m. we'll be back for another reaction episode as well. So we'll see what happens. I will say this just to shut everyone up on the front end. Game four is not must win. Must win is when you are facing elimination. Because you don't have to win game four to stay alive. You're going to play another game after game four, no matter what, which means it's not must win. Must win is when you are facing elimination. That is must win game. That's what that means. I don't know why it bothers me, but it bothers me. People are like, it's like a Tuesday in January, and they're like, oh, it's a must win game for the Preds. And I'm like, there's 36 more to go. It's not must win. It would be a very important win, and it would go a long way to helping them win the series in game number four. But it's not must win until you're facing elimination. That's the final word for today. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you guys for hanging out. We do appreciate you guys. Thank you, Emma. Thank you, Michael, of course, as well. Thank you for listening. We will catch you guys on Monday morning.